And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors.
Hey everyone, this is Patrick with All Things Private Practice. I wanted to just give a huge shout out for The Receptionist for iPad. They've been a sponsor for this podcast for 4 years in a row, and I just want to say how grateful I am to their partnership and what they do for the not only therapist, but also medical community. Your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like billing or simply trying to make a cup of coffee between appointments or trying to use the bathroom, constant interruptions can derail your entire day. This episode and this year's podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist, a sign-in app company. The Receptionist for iPad is a HIPAA-ready digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients or patients can check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from the interruptions and make the most of your time, because it is valuable. Start a free 14-day trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, welcome back to the All Things Private Practice podcast. I'm joined today by Tom Keir and Lauren Sanderson. I hope I said your last name right, Tom.
Yes.
A neurodivergent couple living in Queenstown, New Zealand. After both receiving ADHD diagnosis as adults, Tom also discovered an autism and OCD diagnosis a year prior. They launched NeuroDuo, a platform to share lived experiences with autism and ADHD. Through storytelling, humor, and real talk, they help others feel seen, understood, and empowered. Really excited to have you on here because, you know, I found your stuff on social media. It seems like we mutually follow each other and some of each other's content. And I'm always excited about mixed neurotype relationships and partnerships. So thank you for coming on. And I also want to name to everyone watching, it is currently 7:25 a.m., a day later where they are. Hence the very similarly matching pajama set. And I really love those. So thank you for making the time and coming on so early.
No, no worries.
Thank you for having us. We really love your podcast. So this is all.
Yeah,
thank you.
We might actually get to meet when I'm in Queenstown in the end of February and early March. So I'm hosting two events there in March, and I'm really looking forward to being back there because wow, what a beautiful, beautiful part of the world.
Yeah,
it's absolutely stunning. We lived in Auckland before and moved to Queenstown about 2 years ago, and we're like, why did we not do that sooner?
I spent 2.5 days in Auckland, and that was enough for me. I don't think I ever need to go back. I used it as a base for Hobbiton, which for me was a dream come true. But otherwise,
yeah, I'd
go back.
Yeah.
Are you a big fan of Lord of the Rings?
Oh yeah, big time special interest. Probably my biggest special interest. I think I've probably seen the movies collectively, I would guesstimate 200, 300 times, read the books at least 100 plus times. Like, yeah, it's been a journey for sure.
It would have been a dream come true.
A dream come true.
Oh, yeah. It was very, very cool. So love your country. Love it very much. You are from are you both from the UK?
Yeah, we're both from the UK, but we met in New Zealand. We came over separately and met in Auckland, funny enough. And then, when we met, we weren't both neurotypical, but we both were not diagnosed as neurodivergent and didn't know anything about it. And that's kind of a big story and journey in itself.
Yeah.
But again, diagnosed 3-4 years into the relationship.
Yep.
Working through that. And luckily coming out the other side. But yeah, been a lot of learning.
A lot has happened.
A lot's happened, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. So how long have you two been together as of right now?
About 5 years.
Yeah, just over 5 years.
So more than halfway through the partnership, you both think, what's going on here? Like, what leads us to pursue ADHD diagnosis at that time?
Yeah, I think if we start off initially with me around autism initially, and I think my mental health, probably 2 or 3 years in the region, you have to start taking a big dive. And there were certain things happening that were just becoming harder and harder to explain. Myself and Lauren, and I was diagnosed with general anxiety, which it's kind of common for late diagnosed neurodivergent, but that happened to me. I thought that was it. And then started seeing a therapist, and he suggested to do an online screen test as he sort of seen some autistic traits, mainly being the black and white thought process, which when you're in your own head, you don't really, you just assume that's how everyone else thinks, because that's all you know.
Sure.
So I did the test and scored like super high. And at the time I was like, well, that's weird because I can't see any other way of answering the questions, which looking back now is exactly a sign of autism. And yeah, lo and behold, then I asked Lauren to do the test and she'd scored like super, super low. And I was like, So that process kind of just, got kickstarted pretty quickly. I think Lauren's brother is autistic as well.
My brother's autistic and has ADHD. And when I could see Tom was really struggling, I could see that there was kind of, not the same, but like similar things happening, especially with like sensory things and things like that. So I was said to Tom, I think you potentially could be autistic. And his therapist obviously said something similar. So that kind of pursued him on that path of, we really wanted answers for things. And it's not that a diagnosis is like an answer. Yeah. And it's like the be all and end all. It's more like having that understanding. And we didn't have the understanding of why things were happening, especially for Tom. When you're in a kind of bad headspace, having that understanding is extremely helpful.
Yeah. And I struggled a lot to make friends living in New Zealand. It kind of happened around a similar time as COVID. So there was a lot of moving parts, which kind of made you a bit confused. But I think growing up, I just kind of, a lot of things had been masked. I was kind of a sporty, outgoing person. But looking back, it was probably the ADHD masking my autism or anything.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And then it kind of all move on very quickly. And then the therapist said to me at the time of the autism assessment that he'd present some ADHD traits, and that very quickly become my special interest. And I just zoned in on that. And then it is all kind of,
So then he saw that I was struggling and stuff as well. So it's kind of like there'd become a time where I was kind of like helping Tom. And then I'd got to a point, I'd started a new job, I'd been made redundant, all this stuff had kind of happened. And I always struggle with like time perception and time agnosia, decision paralysis. But I just thought that was me. Well, it is me, but I just thought it was my personality. And it just got to a point where it kind of came to a halt, and I kind of couldn't really continue with like living life as normal again. And Tom could see I was really struggling, and he already had his ADHD assessment appointment before me, and he kindly swapped out his appointment so I could have mine first, because he could see how much I was struggling.
That is some Romeo Juliet type shit right there. What an act of service. But in all seriousness, that's nice to have a partnership where he was picking up on that and like had that understanding of, I can sense this is what's going on. Question for you, in New Zealand, how long does it take to get an autism or ADHD assessment?
Yeah. So I think both times I probably got insanely lucky, and it was probably autism assessments for the 2 or 3 months wait, if that. Right. But I know the next appointment after that was like 9 months. So we were just kind of, it was cancellation. ADHD was very similar. I managed to get one. And then the next one after that with Lauren was months on.
But also we, not everyone is in this position, and we know that it's, can be really, really, really tricky. But we went privately for our diagnosis. Yes. So we can't kind of comment on the public service. I do think it would be better than some other countries where there could be like years wait. But yeah, we ended up going privately just because we'd got to the point where we really needed
something
by that point.
I mean, in New Zealand, from 2026, I'm pretty confident this is going to be law that GPs can actually now diagnose you with ADHD rather than just psychiatrists.
Right.
There was always this huge disconnect. I mean, I'm not a medical professional, but it felt like there's a big disconnect between being able to get an ADHD diagnosis, which is really expensive to do that, to then you can't get medication until you have that. And it, so it's always like this. Yeah.
Then you get your diagnosis and then it kind of feels like, okay, well, what now? And then you don't want to have to pay another $300 to see your psychiatrist again to just go over like next steps. So it's kind of like if it is handed over GP, it makes it one, a bit more affordable for everybody. And two, it allows GPs to actually be trained and understand so that if we had an issue, say right now, we don't have to try and find an appointment with a psychiatrist. We can go to the GP and have an actual conversation where somebody understands what you're talking about.
I think that's huge. You know, having the accessibility, especially opposed to those long wait times, those really expensive appointments where it's like, you know, I just need answers or I just need support. And, you know, for us here in the States, I mean, if you're going privately, you can probably get a quicker turnaround. But I mean, health insurance, if you're using it, it could take 12 to 18 months here to get in with a provider. And it could be really a substantial waiting process and experience and really frustrating because I think for a lot of us, you know, if we're not seeking out ADHD medication, which so many of us are because we need it, and we are strictly like really looking for answers about like what the hell is going on for me because I feel so overwhelmed and I feel so different and I feel so much struggle in so many areas, like just having that frame of reference and the language and the understanding. Yeah. And it is that epiphany moment, but it also doesn't immediately change anything. It just gives you validation, right? And it gives you this final understanding of probably answers you've been seeking out for most of your life.
Yeah, and you're right there. In a lot of ways, probably more to the autism diagnosis, because that was kind of the starting point for me. It is strange. You get this life-changing moment and you get sent out and they send you to give you a leaflet and then you're sent on your way, which is pretty crazy. But that's, I mean, there's no medication for autism. It's not a disease, not something you cure, but understanding that, okay, actually this is something that relates to me. And you can look back into your past, look at your present, and there's a lot of trauma to be dealt with, but it allows you to put things in place going forward. And understand that trauma a bit better.
And it also means things as well, I think. Like, especially in a relationship, Tom also struggles with, what's it called?
Alexithymia. Big struggle with that.
So like understanding his emotions. And we didn't know that before. So we, especially like communication styles and things like that are very, very different. And it could lead to a lot of like frustration and kind of anger on both parts, but Tom not able to explain then how he was feeling or even the fact that he didn't know how he was feeling, it could be really difficult. But now that he has that level of understanding, it's so much better. And even though he still struggles with identifying his emotions, he's able to express that and be comfortable expressing that and have no shame around it, which is important.
The big thing is, nothing changes when you get the autism diagnosis, really, because you're still the same person. You don't take any medication, whatever, but being able to communicate and not be judged in a way is the change that you need to allow yourself to grow into a version of yourself that you've been trying to be your whole life. Because it took me a while, but it was a lot of embarrassment, I guess, shame, guilt of that I can't communicate in this what seems such a simple way that you've known all your life because everyone else does it. Sure. And I mean, I've talked about it before, but I can go out and do ultra marathons and things like that, but things I can push myself to the furthest point and I get through all that. But then you put me in a room where I was going to speak to 2 hour people about something or speak to Lauren about something, that emotion, and I get overwhelmed and I break down. And it's like, I just couldn't connect the two. Like they're just, it's so different. And yeah, understanding that was huge for me.
Absolutely. I think so many of us have like spiky profiles where there are things that we might really excel at or things that might come really easily or naturally. And then other things that a lot of people would say, how come you can do this very complex thing? But this thing that we view as like very simplistic or very easy to do is almost impossible. And I think that is really challenging in general to understand about ourselves, let alone understand about other people who we care about. and that language to just be like, I still don't know how to fully explain this, but here's the language of what I'm experiencing can be so helpful on both sides. Yeah. So Lauren, for you, you know, as an ADHDer in a cross neurotype partnership with an ADHDer, what's that like in terms of like, what was it like pre-discovery versus post-discovery in terms of like communication styles for you? Or just for you?
Yeah, I think before Tom received his diagnosis and before I did, it was, the word would probably be chaos. I mean, my ADHD brain, it's a chaotic brain. It is. But I didn't know that then. But yeah, we were described, we actually went to see a therapist because it kind of, our communication is so different, and how she described it is actually, yeah, kind of hit the nail on the head. So she said that we're a thunderstorm and a turtle. So I don't know if you can kind of guess which voice here. And she basically was saying this was more in kind of where your communication is broken down and you end up having arguments and things like that. Right. I'm a thunderstorm because I want to get things sorted. You have a disagreement, I want to get it out of my head. And I didn't know then, but the reason it was like this urgency to kind of get things just solved, have the conversation, you move on from it and it's done, was because of anxiety. It was the anxiety around, like, I don't like conflict, but from the outside, it could look as if maybe I did. And it's all like anxiety inducing. So again, Tom didn't know that because I didn't communicate it because I didn't actually know it myself. And also the fact that kind of RSD was coming into the mix. And again, I didn't really know that. So any disagreement, any change to tone of voice could just change like an atmosphere very, very quickly, could lead to an argument. And then on the flip side, Tom is somebody that needs time and space in order to understand how he feels in that moment and kind of process what has just happened. And we didn't have anything in place then to kind of give him that time and space. It was like me coming at him kind of as a turtle or tortoise does, goes back into their shell. And then it would just be that vicious cycle. And I think then post-diagnosis, now that we've learned this, it's got 100 times better. So like I'm able to kind of give Tom the space that he needs. Also, Tom is then able to kind of communicate with me to say, can we come back to this in, I don't know, maybe 24 hours, or give me a time so that it's not just left floating. And I think that all helped from, I generally think that came from having our diagnosis, or even if you're self-diagnosed, but finding like that understanding, and like knowledge is power. We didn't know any of this before. And we were just going round in circles. So,
but it comes back to that judgment, having no judgment, because Ronnie, like looking back now, I was embarrassed that I would need time to understand emotion. I would need time to write something down, like just to read to Lauren, because in that moment, and when emotion is over me, the overwhelm just is too much, and that whatever's in my head becomes a big fog, and I've lost whatever thought is. And I just assumed that I was being a shit person, like I wasn't matured in this area, and I needed to do better. So you keep forcing yourself in this situation. But then 9 times out of 10, it would end up in turmoil.
And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Hey everyone, this is Patrick from All Things Private Practice. I am inviting you to our 3rd annual Doubt Yourself, Do It Anyway Summit. And guess what? This year it is in the United States, in beautiful Portland, Maine, not Oregon. I know there's a lot of confusion around that. Portland, Maine is a beautiful coastal city in the Atlantic Ocean. It's a harbor city. There's a lot of history there. It's very funky, very creative, very safe, walkable, lots of diversity. Very progressive city in the middle of Maine. It reminds me a lot of Asheville, North Carolina, where I live. A lot of cool small businesses. And that's exactly why we wanted to have it there. It's going to be September 1st to the 3rd. And you are going to get 9 MBCC CEs. We have ASWB pending. We'll make an announcement when that's finalized. 13 prolific industry leaders. Really about doing things differently.
The summit has always been about showing you that our skills are applicable in so many different ways and to motivate you to think bigger, to grow in this profession, to take more risks, to work through that self-doubt, and to really embrace the doubt yourself, do it anyway mentality. We're going to be talking about how to rewire your trauma histories so that they don't show up in your businesses. We're going to talk about neurodiversity affirming panels. We're going to have workshops on alternative income streams. We have so much involved in this event. So make sure to sign up. Spots are limited September 1st to the 3rd in, again, beautiful Portland, Maine. And the link is in the show notes on my website and everywhere else that you follow my stuff. Doubt yourself, do it anyway, and I will see you in Maine.
But then it's interesting because I would feel this. I would feel like I was a really bad person. I felt like I was mean because I was angry, and I felt like, why doesn't he love me? Like, this is the RSD coming in. Like, why is he not wanting to fix this? Like, he doesn't want to be in this relationship. And when you don't understand where that's coming from, you kind of feel a bit like psychotic. You kind of feel like, what are these thoughts? Like, does everyone think like this? Like, it shouldn't be like you have an argument. And then, because I think as well, I'm big on communication. And for me, an argument is still a form of communication. It's just broken down communication. So I think like not all arguments are bad. Yes, they rise and like there's a feeling inside of you, but it's because you're trying to communicate with one another and maybe it's clashing or there's a difference of opinion or again, yeah, like tone of voice, but it's still an element of communication. So if you have those tools in place to be able to pick that conversation back up in a less kind of hostile environment, I think that is probably what's really helped.
Yeah.
Rupture and repair is a part of relationship, right? So being able to repair rupture and understand where the communication breakdowns occur is so huge. Like early on in my marriage, you know, my wife would give me gifts that I don't know if I liked them or not at the time, if I'm being honest. I don't even really remember. I just know that I didn't react the way she wanted me or expected me to react. And I had no idea that I was ADHD when we first met. And I would just like vacantly stare at her or like not show a level of enthusiasm that she was expecting for the amount of effort and energy. And that would make her feel so hurt. And I would be so ashamed because I'm like, I don't understand what I'm doing wrong. I'm just reacting the way I always react. And so that's something that has really shifted for us post-discovery. And then also, I really struggle with auditory processing. So if she's talking to me, but I'm doing something else or my focus is elsewhere, I might be kind of responding, but I'm not actually able to absorb, right? And then I've gotten the habit of being like, wait, what did you say? And she would get so frustrated because she would be like, you've been talking to me this entire time. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I have no idea what you've been talking about for the last however long. And that would lead to like immediate frustration on her part, and understandably so. But now we can like, she'll be like, get my attention by either snapping or like using some sort of like very direct language over and over to make sure I'm paying attention. Then she'll be like, are you paying attention? Like, can we focus on this right now? And I'm like, yes, let me put this down because otherwise I might say yes. And then 5 days later, she's like, so we're going to go do that thing Friday, right? I'm like, the fuck are you talking about?
I think the gifts and even more in like intimate moments and stuff in the relationship. Again, previously, there's, I guess, things that Lauren might find intimate. Me not understanding my own emotions and stuff, I would, like I say, have a blank face and just not present in the way that she would expect. And that would probably make her feel not loved, I guess.
I think as well, this is going to sound really harsh, but I think, and I don't mean it in a harsh way, but learning to not have expectations of each other, like it, not in a, like you can't lean on that person because we definitely can lean on each other. But just expectation is huge. And if you expect, say, the presents, I used to feel that as well. Like I love birthdays and celebrating things. And Tom hates, like,
me too.
Hates that. I now understand why, but before I didn't. And I would be like, staring at him as he's opening his presents. I'd be like making lots of noise,
it's like my personal hell.
Yeah, like now you just please shut the door and go to different rooms.
Now I know, and I can't feel hurt because it has nothing to do with me. It's not because I'm the person giving the present and he's like, oh God, hurt.
Exactly.
It's more to do with how he feels and how comfortable he is and sensory things and a whole heap of other things. So if my expectation isn't to the fact that he's going to be like, whoa, this is amazing, then I don't feel hurt because I don't have that really, like that expectation in my mind. I think that's helped me as well.
That's actually a great point. And I think that gets missed a lot. And Dr. Megan Neff always talks about on our other podcast, Divergent Conversations, about how you can't be everything for everything for your partner, right? You cannot be the entire village. And you need your partner to have their own interests, their own friend groups, their own ability to self-soothe when they're alone at times. Because I know for my wife at first, like she has a huge family. I love them very much, but it's very loud. It's very overwhelming. And I was always trying to figure out ways to get out of like birthdays, holidays, etc., just to be at home alone. And she would interpret that as I didn't like her family. And I'm like, it really has nothing to do with that. I can't explain why, but when I leave your family's house, I am so exhausted for a week that I can hardly function. Now to better understand like my sensory system and the way that I experience sensory input, I'm like, oh. And now they all talk about it openly, like where they're like, Patrick's not coming. He gets way too overwhelmed in this space or in this environment and whatever. And
nice.
It's really wonderful to be able to have supportive partnership. And it sounds like that's what you two have. And I know for a lot of you listening, like that's not often the case. Like we either end up breaking up with people or ending relationships because of these communication struggles, especially if we don't know what's happening, internalizing it, displacing the blame on the other person, and around we go. And that sucks to have those relationships end that way, because a lot of the time it's just simple misunderstanding and just missing each other, because the neurotypes and the neurology and the communication styles and processing styles are just so different, as are the attention spans and the executive functioning. So I know that it makes a huge difference if you can figure this out together and support one another. And it sounds like you two have really figured out a way to do that, because I watch your content. You make incredible content together. And on the outside looking in, that could be like, that's just social media. Like everything looks so glamorous or so connected all the time. But it really is about how we understand each other's differences and struggles and challenges and how we support one another through those things, while also not, like you said, Lauren, not internalizing everything as if it is my expectation or my issue to fix or my problem to solve, because that is just simply unrealistic.
Yeah, definitely. I think unrealistic goals or expectations are definitely a downfall. And I think also you mentioned something then about the your wife's family and her maybe interpreting that, or them interpreting that as kind of blame. I think blame is also a big one in that, because we've had the same thing, whereas maybe Tom's left a social situation and I'm like, well, why don't you want to get to know my friends?
Yep.
In that situation, I wasn't thinking about Tom, and that's because I was unaware of what was happening for him. I was thinking more of like, oh, what are my friends going to think? All that stuff, the outside things that are just out of my control. But now it's kind of,
I think, especially early on in relationships, and this is probably pretty common for most people, like when you do meet initially with somebody and you can start dating, you have a different persona, but you maybe push yourself to do things that you might not normally do. And you go to these sort of situations you present in this way, which is this version of you, which you thought was great and funny, whatever. But then you come home and you're like crash and burn.
Yep.
And you do end up getting away with that for a while when you're dating, because you're not in that space every day. You come up, you might see a person dating 2 to 3 times a week and you escape and burn out in silence. But I mean, it's easy to say for us now, but that all happened when we didn't have the diagnosis. It didn't have that understanding.
I think, before the diagnosis, as Tom was just saying then, he would present in certain ways when we were kind of like, we love going to festivals as well. Like, we love music festivals. And obviously, I've met his friends and things like that. But I remember thinking, why does he act this way with friends? And he's like this outgoing, probably like quite funny, loud character. But then he comes back to me, and this is when we were first kind of dating, so I had no idea what was happening. And he would just be like total opposite. And right. Now I know, like, that I didn't know that then, but now I know that that is actually like him coming back and unmasking and just being like so exhausted from the social situation. But beforehand, again, because of that expectation, and I was probably quite selfishly thinking about myself in that moment to be like, well, hang on a minute. Why is he not comfortable enough to be himself? Because I thought himself was this loud, bubbly, like...
this really outgoing version of him, this really social version of him, more really communicative. Yeah.
And it's really, I mean, it's terrible, it's horrible in a relationship that happens because your expectations are not where they... they don't line up. But the one thing I probably struggled with as well is, personally, I thought this was this version of me. I thought I was this outgoing person. Sure. And then trying to understand, and when I learned what masking was, that was like life-changing for me. I didn't believe it would relate to me for a while, but when I finally had some peace with it, I was like, a big, big moment.
And it can also create, I'm just being mindful of time. We just have a couple minutes left, but it can also create an unfortunate dynamic where it's like post-discovery, if you're not understanding and supportive and curious about being supportive of one another's journeys, it can create this dynamic where it's like, how come post-discovery, you're like a completely different person now? Like, you're not maybe able to push yourself to do the things that you were doing pre-discovery. And then it's like, wow, we really have to unpack like what masking looks like, the toll that it takes, autistic burnout, all of the things. And I think just giving ourselves more grace, more compassion, more acceptance, and having more curiosity with each other about just like, how can we best support each other, acknowledging that there are going to be these like misses at times, but we are not doing this intentionally. And it is always about coming back to the neurology behind the scenes and the way that our brains work and operate.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we, Chris, quickly, because I know we've only got a bit of time, I completely agree with that. But I think as well, in order for a relationship to work, it's that understanding of self first as well, because especially when you've got two people that have been diagnosed and you're trying to navigate things yourself, if you don't try and understand or have the knowledge behind your own diagnosis, you're not able to kind of communicate with your partner or your friend about kind of what your needs. So understanding self is actually probably the first step, and then starting to understand then that other person's needs and how they kind of correlate, how they might clash, what those types of things.
And we had a question today, and we're talking specifically about neurodivergent relationships, but I think relationships as a whole, if you're neurodivergent, neurotypical, whatever it may be, and if you get together undiagnosed and you both get diagnosed, one to get diagnosed, whatever it is, it's more about if the person is willing to learn and understand, then that is a sign of somebody that hopefully you can learn to grow with together.
Absolutely.
So we obviously talk about neurodivergence a lot because that's what the field we're in, but if one of you gets diagnosed, that's not the end of it. Like, it's something that you hopefully work through together.
It's like any relationship, isn't it? Like, communication is key, but everyone has such communication styles. But having that willingness to be able to learn and be open to learning more about each other, through this isn't going to change. Like, we're going to continuously adapt. So,
absolutely. Really well said. I agree. Where can people find you all on Instagram or whatever else you're doing? Because your content is great. Again, your content and ADHD Love, who are some of my favorite content creators. I don't know if you'll follow them, but they are so good. Having cross neurotype relationship content is super important, I think. And
I think it's just really well done. And also, you all get to do it from the beautiful backdrop of New Zealand, which, hell, is even better.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, Instagram's the best thing to find us on. It is Neuro Duo. Should be spelled any.
N-E-U-R-O-D-U-O. Neuro Duo. Although I do love how you say it, Patrick. That's great.
Neuro Duo.
Yeah. Yeah. We are on Instagram. We are on TikTok, but not fully yet. We kind of wanted to just dedicate ourselves to maybe one platform and kind of one community and avoid the overwhelm.
Yep. I appreciate that. Well, your content is great. Your follower count has been rapidly rising. For those of you who are interested in their content, definitely check it out. We'll include the link in the show notes so you have easy access. And really want to say thank you both so much for joining us from the future. And hopefully get to meet y'all in person potentially in the spring of next year.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Awesome.
Love what you're doing as well. These discussions and all your social posts are amazing, and your TED talk and stuff as well is really inspirational. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. To everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, episodes are out on Saturdays on all major platforms and YouTube. Like, download, subscribe, share. Doubt yourself, do it anyway. We'll see you next week.